Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm an SMB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have talkcasts every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Twitter, my account there is sfuoncall. Also, I have a personal account there called Paul Franz. If you want to follow me, that's fine. Just remember, I'm very proud to be a Catholic and an O's fan, and I love technology. So if any of those put you off, don't follow me. And of course, I have a tertiary account called Franz Games, where I announce things about updates to the client and the websites and things like that. And of course, just a reminder, I do have a Facebook page. Look for SFU On Call and you will find me on Facebook. I think you can post things there, you know, at least any messages, and I'd be happy to reply. Okay, yeah, you can reply to my posts. Just remember that is possible. When it comes to ADB, they've been busy, you know, finding out what people want for miniatures this week. But, you know, and they've been keeping the nose to the grindstone and working on the latest Master Starship books. And, you know, I think they released Captain's Log number 48 on the different ebooks. So if you have not seen it there, you know, and you want a copy, grab it. It's a lot cheaper and it does not deteriorate. Just keep your backups. Moving on to the SW Online tournaments, we have the Sapphire Star Tournament 5, which is round one is finally completed with Sir Hood being defeated by Drago Astro. We have a round two game left, which is going to be Cadet Snippy in the Hydrant versus the Devil. I guess it's called, it's not the Devil, it's the Devil. And he's in the Great Black Shark with the Gazini option, i.e. has the two drone racks. Now, to me, the interesting matchup is going to be in the round three, which is Drago Astro beat Frenzik or something like that. It was a Romulan KR versus the Fed. Fed lost because the Fed wasn't that experienced and didn't know how to really fight plasma. got himself really beat up. But the round three matchup for Drago Astro in his Romulan KR is going to be versus Mad Jack in the Klingon. I find this interesting because basically the KR is the Klingon. For the most part, there's some minor phaser differences, of course. But, and of course, then there's the switch off for disruptors for plasma S's and plasma F's. So, to me, that's going to be the interesting part because basically, when it comes to turn mode, you know, it's going to be around the same. Obviously, the big difference there is going to be power curve because of with that matchup, the power curve is going to be different for each ship because you got the Klingon who's very flexible when it comes to turn by turn, and you've got the KR, which is not as flexible because he has to be always either holding or charging his plasma. So that should be, I think, a very interesting battle. I am hoping to catch that one. Moving on to the library, actually not much progress there, though there have been some redos on the Romulan SPs, the Sparrowhawks. I have not uploaded them. Those will be done shortly. Now, when it comes to FedCom libraries, there's actually new ships. I just haven't had a chance to process them. and add them to the library. But currently, the squadron-sized ships are, there's 364 of those, and then fleet-sized ships are 265 of those. So, you know, and I think a lot of people have actually been having fun playing Federation Commander. If you find any issues with the Federation Commander room, please tell me immediately. I want to fix them ASAP, and I will be working on putting out support for the X ships. Oh, and a reminder for those of you who are SFB Online and FedCom Online, we will be switching servers on Monday. So on Monday, the site will go down for a little bit. Might take a little bit of time to switch over to the new server. So this is going to happen at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So those not in the Eastern Daylight Time zone, just keep that in mind. I try to make it a time when the least number of individuals are actually on the server, and I will actually be posting reminders to everyone. I'll be sending out an email as a reminder to everyone who's currently a member of SFB Online, FedCom Online. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, the one and only Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have Barry, we have me, and we have nobody else. So, enjoy the show. As is before the podcast started, me and Barry, we actually were discussing the Carnivons a little bit from last week. One of the things that we didn't get around to discussing before he had to leave was a few things about the Carnivons. Number one was that, of course, they have the Tournament of Sea, which is actually, it's not bad. There's been worse, you know, so...
So, well, am I unmuted?
Yes, you are unmuted. I forgot to mute you.
What's that?
I forgot to mute to begin with, so.
Oh, okay.
Fortunately, you were quiet.
Oh, okay.
That one could have been awkward.
So, so any case, yeah, it's turn mode C, but remember that it has those heel nippers, which can make things interesting. So, for example, if you were fighting, say, a Winox box, and you got to range 3, and you fired both of them at it, at the Ox box, you've got a pretty good possibility of turning him. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, that Ox box can't, you know, at range 3, he's not going to be able to tractor auction you.
True.
Now, sure, most of his weapons can still probably hit you, but he can't do the tractor auction.
Oh,
and
agree.
A range 3 firing pass with disruptor cannons, and especially if you've got the death bolts set up to be as anti-drones.
Right.
But again, as
we discussed before the podcast started, which is of course the biggest problem with death bolts is the customizations, and they cost additional time. And actually, I have not
correct.
There's one thing I did not look up, which because of the death bolts are basically can be considered kind of a multi-turn army weapon to a certain degree. The question is, would you start weapon status 3 like you do with the tournament? Would you be allowed to?
How many turns of army do you have?
Right. Exactly.
Well, let's just presume that at weapon status 3, you've got death bolts that are ready to go, but they don't have any specials.
Right. That's my assumption at the moment.
Right. But given the fact that your disruptor cannons are a two-turn arming weapon, That's a ship that probably doesn't do well at an anchor, but the whole point for the heel nippers is that you could probably usually prevent somebody from anchoring you.
Right.
And therefore you'd have a firing pass. You don't want to have a firing pass every turn because it takes so long to arm the disruptor cannons.
True. Well, it's two-turn arming, so it's not too bad.
Right, but the off-turn of arming, it's only 2 points of power per disruptor cannon, so it's not too horrible an arming cost. So that ship can make a firing pass and then do decent damage on a firing pass at high speed and then run away. And pretty much during the firing pass, it can almost guarantee that it can say, you go that way, I'm going to go this way. And by the time you get back around, I've got everything back up and running.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah. And if you don't do any specials on the death bolts, that's a pretty nasty weapon. Although it is vulnerable to drones or actually I think it can survive ADD rounds. But it is a little bit vulnerable to drones.
Right. Well, drone versus drone, you know.
Unless, what's that?
Kind of drone versus drone, kind of auto, automatic destruction.
Right. Unless you set it up to have an ADD of its own, in which case you just fire. At that point, you fire the drones when it's at range one. And then in that case, you would have to fire. It would need to support its own death bolts. So if you're up against, say, a Klingon, you might want to just say, okay, I'm going to close with the death bolts. And if you try to use your drones against it, I'll shoot them down with phasers.
Damn! Wow. Sorry.
What?
Barry, I just found the rule. It says, at Weapon Status 3, the ship's initial loading of death bolts can be assumed to be fully completed, including any modifications, FD20.5, which is all those wonderful little toys.
Oh, so you can put them all in there.
Yep.
Wow. So that first salvo is nasty. Although, to tell you the truth, every time you make it more powerful, I think it does less damage.
Right, exactly. So that's one thing you always have to keep in mind. But
you don't need everything.
Yeah. Well, in tournament play, I'm sure if we have it in a tournament, my assumption would be that would be limited the number of specializations that you can be prepared with. Limited one or two, or one, I think.
Right. Yeah. Well, put an anti-tractor in there, put a depends if you're up against drones or not. You might want to do that,
mm-hmm.
maybe not. But certainly an anti-tractor would make it more vicious. The other one of where it detonates at range, that's kind of nasty.
Oh, yeah, what was it? Oh, focus burst. Yeah.
Focus burst, right. which it's not an automatic hit, but boy, does it take someone's timing out.
Exactly. That's the key thing. That's the whole idea of the swordfish. Yeah, swordfish.
Yes.
Which
and
is,
in fact, if you're doing the focus bolt, you probably don't need the anti-tractor.
Right.
Sure, you can say, oh, well, maybe he did a focus bolt. I'll just tractor it at range 2. Well, that gets expensive.
Yeah. Oh, that's an interesting.
I just want to leave that one out there for.
Okay.
What's that?
Well, I'm thinking about it, is with the anti-tractor, my assumption is that when you try to tractor it, it would be like a tractor auction, a normal tractor auction against a ship. Because normally,
right,
when you tractor a seeking weapon, it's automatic. Unless you can't tractor like a plasma, you can't tractor a plasma. But with death bolts, basically you'd have to have a tractor auction of sorts. I.e., if you have anti-tractor, you say, okay, I'm tractoring, and you would say no, and then you say, okay, I'm going to apply 2 points of tractor if he really wants, you know, instead of having he tries your tractor and it fails, and then he has to wait for like the next impulse.
Yes.
You know.
Does it say that that's done? Is it? Hang on a sec.
No, it doesn't. It does not say. All it says is that it's a single crew action.
Death bolt.
And that every 2 points of warhead reduction provides 1 point of anti-tractor energy.
Right. So
to me, that
it doesn't
that indicates it's not explicitly stated, which of course we know how that is in SFB rules.
Yeah.
My assumption is that since it's anti-tractor energy, that it actually means that basically that it's a tractor auction at that point.
Right.
Oh man. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, but
just give it 2 points of anti-tractor.
Yeah, so it takes a 3 point tractor to take it to stop it at range 1.
Yep.
Player must record in writing a range for the focus burst. The player must record in writing a range for the target, which cannot be more than 3 hexes or less than 1 hex.
Right.
So, yeah. Oh, but the hit numbers go down as the range goes.
Oh, yeah. The range 3. Yeah. You got 1/3 chance.
Yeah,
range 2, you got 50% chance. Range 1, you've got a 2/3 chance.
Right. And, reduces the warhead by 6 points, and then and half of that amount will be scored as damage. So let's say you start with a 30-point warhead. It requires 6 points, so you have 24 for the focus burst, and then it's half, so it's 12 points of damage. And then a hit, and then a percentage hit. It's not automatic. So that focus burst is really limiting.
Mm-hmm. And then you have the minor issue.
What?
Which is if for any reason, such as displacement, involuntary movement by a black hole, the death ball winds up closer to its target than it's programmed to fire, the weapon will go inert.
Yes. Right. But it doesn't have to move if it so that if you were both going to move closer and you were going to over, it just doesn't move. Instead, it fires.
Right.
But it also means that, and the death bolts have a little bit of adjustment as to what shield they're going to hit. And I suspect with a focus bolt, you have even more say-so as to what shield it's going to hit. Which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, I like those death bolts. I think in a lot of ways, just much, much more powerful than a drone. A lot more flexibility and options.
Oh, agreed. Hey, Russ. Definitely a long time, actually. The death bolts, I agree, are quite an interesting weapon. Obviously, the limitations for that are that to make them specialize, it takes time versus cost. Because for drones,
now
you get to modify it, but it costs you when it comes to BPV. So in the case of tournaments, they limit the number of BPV you can do. Now, in a tournament, there's no reason to limit the number of changes that a person can do to a death bolt, in my mind, because the cost is time. And in tournament, you don't have the time. You know?
Well, it's not only time, but it's also warhead strength.
Right. Agreed there. But
but that's still pretty minor.
Right. Agreed. But the point is that in tournament play, obviously the beginning death bolts would have to be limited to maybe like one specialization. But during play, other than the first loading, when you start, there is no reason to have any rule to say, okay, limited the number of changes or what you can change, because some are pointless. For example, the ECM.
Right.
Actually, the ECM.
That was the one I was going to ask about.
ECM, I would think, normally would have to be eliminated in tournament play. Because we don't have any ECM. We have no way of
other than weasels.
Right, and this is ECM. This is not ECCM.
Yes.
So it makes it hard to kill. And there's no way to counteract that in tournament play because you're not allowed to put power towards ECCM.
Right. Correct.
So, that's the one specialization we'd have to actually eliminate.
I would agree with that no ECM.
Right.
And to tell you the truth, the armor is probably pretty useless. Because it already takes 10 points of damage to kill it.
Right.
So adding 3 points, the time is just not worth it. And the Spitfire would be good against somebody like a Zen, where you can use it to. You might want to have that set up with a scatter pack.
Right. You might have one of your death bolts like that, but of course, by doing so, you've just eliminated, or at least, you've just eliminated or limited yourself to the use of that death bolt.
Correct. But here's where it comes in really handy. You set one or two of them up as death bolts against the Klingon or Kazinti, and you know that when they launch their scatter pack, that's when you launch those Spitfires. Now, if the guy doesn't launch his scatter pack, you're sitting on death bolts that you can't launch. Because you cannot start any specials. You can't even start the arming process on a death bolt until the last one's already been fired.
Okay, so when...
The but the Spitfire gives it 6 anti-drone shots.
Right.
But here's the other thing, is that that Spitfire will only engage targets in its FA arc and not in its own hex, and it can't differentiate between friendly and enemy targets. So you got to be careful that your Spitfires don't shoot at each other. Oh, well, if you fire two Death Bolts at the same, and they stay in the same hex, then they're not going to shoot at each other.
Right. The important in this case, in my mind, would be shuttles. You got to make sure you don't have a shuttle in the FA arc of the Death Bolt.
Right.
That's a rare case, I think. But still one thing that obviously you have to keep in mind if you're engaged in a knife fight. Actually, if you're in a knife fight, these are useless.
If you have more than one Death Bolt eligible to fire at a target, it is possible that both or all will fire at the same target or at different targets. So you basically say, okay, let's say it's a stack of 6 drones and you've got 2 Death Bolts. So you pick the drones, roll a D6 to see which one is the target for each one, and they could both select the same or different targets.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing about the Spitfire is, okay, so it got 1 or 2 shots against a lot of drones, and now it keeps going, and it still engages its primary target.
Agreed.
Unless you set it for, I guess you could have it targeted on one of the drones. As soon as that drone's taken out, well, it would impact on that drone. Yeah, so you would not want to target it on the drone.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that was one thing I was double checking. Yes.
Yeah, so you probably don't want to use the Spitfire. Again, it takes the whole deck crew action. You probably don't want to give it all 6 anti-drones, maybe 2, because you're only going to get 2 firing opportunities max.
Right. And
only reduces the warhead strength by 2. So it's still a 28-point drone.
Understood, but also... Then we have here's always the issue with the Spitfire in my mind, is that, yeah, it's fine if the drones are between you and the primary target.
Yeah.
But in case of a scatter pack, what's the primary target? The primary target is going to be basically the shuttle is what it's going to be. So that the... Death Bolt is going to have to go towards that, and so instead of hitting the ship, firing its Spitfires at the drones coming in as it's coming towards the ship and then hitting the ship, it might, it's going to be, you have to target it on the shuttle so that it will hit the drones and kill and do what you want it to do, but then it's just going to kill the shuttle.
Well, you could ballistically target. Let's say you have 2 Spitfires. You ballistically target one and have the other one target the shuttle. Or have one go against the ship and one go against the shuttle, so you're not overkilling the shuttle.
Agreed. I definitely think this is one of those things that the Death Bolt, in my mind, you do this for a single Death Bolt, but again, the thing that it does is it reduces the amount of damage that you can do with that Death Bolt if you don't use the Spitfire portion of it, or
Yeah.
You do, or you don't, or you can't fire at the ship. And if you're using it to defend yourself against the scatter pack.
Well, no. If you're using it against a scatter pack, you still can have a primary target against the ship. And any eligible target that gets within the FA arc and within range gets an ADD bolt, the shot fired once per impulse.
Right, but that assumes that that it's not the whole situation of, let's say the Hemingway, where he did hit, did it, which is basically he would draw. Actually, is it did Sandy Hemingway do that? I'm not sure, but basically, if you launch your shuttle, have that go straight early in the like turn one, and
Yeah.
you do a corner dive, so that you got
Yeah.
a big difference, different a big hex difference
Right,
between
the
your
ship
ship and
and the
the
shuttle
shuttle.
are.
So
Could
if
you
you
target
launch it
the
towards the
ship
ship,
both against
the drones
yourself?
aren't guaranteed to be three hexes, three hexes close to it.
Well, another thing you could do is you could. What would happen if you targeted the death bolt against yourself? And then you ran ahead of the death bolt and you dragged the enemy drones, and a death bolt was firing at the enemy drones.
That is definitely,
Would you do
that's an
that?
interesting idea. Now, obviously, before it hits you, you can drop tracking on it.
Then you can drop tracking.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can target a drone against yourself.
Well, obviously you can to a certain degree. Kind of, that's what ECM drones are, where they're protecting the ship. Is that you can have it the target to
Right.
be the ship.
Okay.
Now, for a regular drone, I'm not. I would guess that you could. There's nothing stopping you from targeting your own ship. Now, it's kind of weird, especially when
Right.
you break have that timing right, because if that death bolt ever enters your hex, you're dead.
Well, there's another way of doing it. Okay. This is gonna sound bizarre. You launch the death bolt, and the first impulse, it has to move forward.
Right.
Okay. Then you hit it with a heel nipper.
That actually that
It turns sideways, and you go forwards through that spot.
Yeah, but then you have to take all that damage against the
No.
death bolt.
Well, if it damages it, it doesn't destroy it.
Yeah, but again, makes it easier to kill.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you do 2 or 3 points of damage to it, so it's
And
still, got 7 points of damage. Yeah, that's kind of hard to kill at range.
the
I
question
mean.
is, okay, and this is always the question, because of invariably there are rules that for drones, if you fire your own drone, it's basically, I think there's rules against firing at your own weapons. I'm pretty sure there is.
Correct.
I'd have
You
to.
can't tractor your own drums.
That is true.
That makes them go inert.
Only you, Barry. Only you.
Possibility. Yeah, it's like this is an interesting system. It's got some interesting angles to it. There's a lot of stuff that in here. It's like, you can do this, you can do this. I like the fact that it's got all these little things that you can do with it. That's an interesting system because there's so many possibilities and so many fiddly bits that you can try with it.
Only you, Barry. Only you.
I really like these Carnarvons. Thank you for bringing them up last week. It's like, you know, there's a lot to this.
Yes, there are. Yes, there are.
Sadly, I think if they hadn't been so Civil War minded, they would have dominated against everybody else.
It's possible, yeah. I would think that the ships would definitely have improved. With refits and so forth, because of the biggest issue for them, the way I see it, is the warp power requirement for certain weapons, i.e. the hill nippers,
well,
and overloading the disruptor cannons.
Well, even so, the disruptor cannons were most, two-thirds of the unit, even on an overload, two-thirds, well, on the second turn of arming, half the energy is not warp.
Right, right. Oh, agreed. But at the same time, that doesn't, overall, that doesn't matter that much, to a certain degree, I mean.
Right.
Because yeah. of, most of your power is going to be warp power anyway.
Yeah.
But obviously it does help.
And the heel nippers are, and now think about this. Heel nippers are absolutely devastating to Orions. Because they do warp damage through the shields.
That's true.
So that Orion is coming at you with his brick, and you say, turn, I'll take a warp point. Oh, did you brick the wrong shield?
Yep.
How do you brick the correct shield up against the heel nipper?
Yeah, well, but of course, here's the issue. When it comes to the heel nipper, you're not going to be firing it outside of range 3. So you got to get pretty darn close to that ship to fire the heel nipper.
Yes.
So you don't want to be coming directly straight into that Orion, because if that's the case, you will be hitting the brick before you're able to fire the heel nipper and change his direction. And that's not even guaranteed. You know?
Right.
So.
Well, I mean, the heel nipper does have a max range of 8. Mm-hmm. Now, its accuracy goes through the floor.
Yep.
But, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely, to me, the heel nipper is the heel nipper. In other words, it's not designed for your attack run when you're going towards your opponent. It's when you've done your battle pass and you're coming around and you're able to get behind your opponent, or obviously in the case of like Romulans or Plasma, where they've already done their they've turned off. That's when the heel nipper is very effective, is when you're chasing your opponent.
Well, yes and no. They cannot be used against plasmas, is that correct? Yeah.
That's one thing.
Plasma damage 2 and have no effect on plasma torpedoes.
Okay.
But at range of 4 with 2 points of power, they have a 50-50 shot of hitting. So if I have 2 of them, that's a 75% chance that I can turn somebody at range 4. That's good enough.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah. Now, the Orion, yeah, sure, he can get turned and then can immediately do a high energy turn.
Yeah, Yeah, but at the same time for the Orion has to have that high energy turn pre-allocated, possibly, or at least have enough batteries to do that. And even the Orion, even though they're classified as a nimble ship, therefore they have two HEP bonuses for most Orion ships.
Yes.
It still uses up one of their bonuses.
Right.
You know, so you're not going to do that unless you really have to.
Right. But the other thing is that Orion's warp power is key. They're already low in power. They're already losing to doubling. And now you're saying, oh, and here, take another warp power.
Right.
Another warp power hit.
Oh, agreed. So, you know, it basically can be double damage for that turn.
Yes. Well, no, I don't think it does double damage.
The point I'm trying to make is that you have damage caused by you doubling the engine, then you have another point of damage caused by the heel nipper that got fired on that same engine.
Correct.
So it's basically doubling the damage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, against the Orions, this is...
Now, so okay,
and you can use heel nippers against drones, and they're actually very effective against drones.
Oh, of course they are, and then in addition to turning them, they do damage to them, based on the speed of the drone.
Right. Correct.
And that's why.
So,
that's
why got two heel nippers. I'm up against the Zin. He's launched a wave of massive wave of drones, and I can take out eight of them, or at least turn eight of them.
Yep. And then actually, there's one. Well, they actually mentioned one of the C4 module races. Sorry, empires, the Flivvers, with their hyper drones.
Yeah.
And it says, basically, if a heel nipper hits on my hyperdrone, the hyperdrone's dead.
Right.
Because it's going speed 64. You know,
yeah.
It's just incredible amount of speed. It's like, it's dead.
Well, also, does a heel nipper, let's see, how much damage does it do based on the speed of the weapon? His word count effect. Additional point of damage for every 3 points of speed. Moving fast. Okay, shuttles are basically just does 1 point of damage. Fired a drone, and his word. 1 point of damage for drone or missile, but add an additional point of damage for every 3 points of speed. Moving fast and speed 12. So speed 20 drone.
As pointed out, gets 4 points of damage.
For speed 20 drone, it's 4 points of damage?
Yeah, that's the damage example that they have right there.
No, it just takes 1 point of damage plus an additional 3 points. Okay, so heel nippers automatically kill drones. Well, if it hits.
Right, it's type 1 drones.
Type 1 drones, and if it's a type 4 and it hits, it's still going to turn it.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, the drone turned, it won't hit, and it's still there, but now I know it's a large drone. So you ID'd it, you turned it, and you damaged it all in one shot.
That's a good question.
And if it's a speed 32 large drone, it kills it anyway.
Okay, so heel nipper. Okay, no. The resolve effect number 2 normally and count effect number 3. as if the drone had a center warp. So center warp.
Oh, so it doesn't turn it, but it does cause it to lose a movement.
Right.
Okay. That's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
So the drone didn't move. It got damaged. If it was speed 20, if it was speed 32, it's killed. And at speed 20, it's lost the movement. You say, okay, it's still there. If it's still there, it's a speed 20 large drone, but it didn't. It's not going to move. And it's damaged. Now, if it's assuming it's range 1, a P3 is an automatic kill at that point because you've done 4 points of damage to it.
Wow, that's a neat idea.
What is?
Russ, he did some work on monster stuff. He did, and he was building an MCIDS.
That monster close in defense system.
Yeah, that targeted a hex with multiple mini vortexes, each size 7. Targets get their facing randomized with a 6-sided die. Most seeking weapons get one head slash turn that effectively spreads out any massing of drones, making normally MCIDs brutally effective. That was weird.
Yes. Well, other than the fact that the drones have to then stop for a turn and head.
Right.
So they may still be in the same hex, but they just lost a movement.
Right. But at the same time, depending upon the facing of the drone, it could, you know, it could be required to turn.
Oh, right. Because if it's still facing the right way, it might not be able to hit.
Right, as long as it's an FA arc, it has to
move.
Right, it can't hit.
Right.
As Russ was pointing out, statistically, half the stack will hit and the other half doesn't need to and moves forward. That's true.
Or, yes. Well, actually, or they could slip left or slip right, depending, and then turn.
That's true. The question is, the random maximization, the question is the slip mode reset by the changing of facing,
for the heel nipper it is
right, but right.
Right. So the heel nipper resets turn mode and slip mode.
Right.
Which against the ship is, if you were counting on, oh, my turn mode has been reset, I'm going to turn, and then, oops, I can't.
Right.
Yeah. That is, weapons that affect ship's movement can be very deadly. That's one of the reasons I like the ARF for the, and that's Peter Bakia's favorite race is the Alunda. And I bet you the reason is because of that ARF, which allows you to move other ships.
Wouldn't surprise me. Yeah, this actually, of course, with the heel nipper, did you read that the one rule, E24.321? Note, And okay, then I'll read it.
3, 2, 1.
Yeah. Note, in the case of the Gorn ships, both engines are actually center, even though they're designated right and left for purpose of damage allocation. So in other words, if you're flying, if the Carnivon is flying against a Gorn, he can't turn the Gorn.
He can't turn him. Right. But you can reset his turn mode. You can reset his split mode, and you can cause him to lose a movement.
Right.
So, yeah, not quite as effective against the Gorn as other ships, but is there anybody else who has just center warp?
No. Yeah. Because that would be definitely an odd empire. It's possible, like one of the C4s do, but I don't think there's any in the Alpha Octant that are just center.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, other than obviously the Gorns, but that's because it's actually noted here. You know.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, because the Hydrant have right, left, obviously, and center, you know.
Yeah. Oh, there's plenty of three-engine.
Right.
Ships.
Russ, it's nice to have you here. But, yeah. So, you know, the hidden numbers are definitely quite an interesting weapon. Same for the, you know, I think we, as you pointed out earlier, you know, the disruptor cannons are quite nice. Yeah, they're two turn army weapons, but they basically double the damage of a disruptor.
Correct. Correct.
And they're pretty close. Pretty close, anyway. To the hit of a disruptor. So
they are the same as a disruptor. The hit numbers are identical.
Yeah, but you don't get UIM. No UIM is possible.
Correct. So, right. And to tell you the truth, a standard heal disruptor cannon standard is the same as it's identical to an overloaded disruptor.
Yeah.
Other than it can do more damage outside of range 8.
Right. Oh yeah. Oh, that was, I agree that's one of those interesting things. And actually the disruptor cannon can have Durfax installed.
Yeah. Well, I think the tournament cruiser, that's kind of automatic.
Yeah, and for the most part, in tournament play, do you really, you know, fire that much at long range?
No, you don't.
No.
So for
at least, I mean, disruptors play, at long range. Yes, you'll do the occasional phaser one long range shot because you've got a down shield facing you, but that's about it.
Well, disruptors, I very often fire in a 9 to 16 range.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about 22 or greater.
Not too often.
Yeah, because I've never fired anything outside of range 15.
Yeah, and I guess Durfax is only. Well, that's more of a fleet weapon, I guess. Durfax.
Exactly. That's the key there.
Yeah.
But this was an empire that actually had fleets. You know, there is a world, mm-hmm. very surprising sometimes it is, outside of tournament play.
But there's a world outside of tournament. I've heard about that.
Yeah, I know. Actually, that was the funny part, which was I was checking things, you know, before the podcast began. And there were like 14 people logged into SFB Online. And there was at least two campaign games going on.
Okay.
There's a few campaigns going on at the moment on the SFB Online, including Matt's one, and I think that someone else has started one too.
Yeah.
Always like
since I've already allocated vacation days for the time period of Gamers of Stemmer, I'll probably be in the New York area, so I could probably head over to your place maybe over that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
We can get a couple of games of brass in or something like that.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great.
Yeah. No, I'll get my rail token back.
Still got it right here.
Yeah, that's the whole reason for the trip. Yeah. Of course, it's going to be a fun drive out there. I hope the weather's cooler. Because it was a few days ago. I mean, the last time I was in New York, I put $1,000 into my car, and my wife was like, oh, man. It's like 2 months ago you put $1,000 in. Then you put another $1,000 in. Well, you know, need to pass inspection.
Mm-hmm. Oh, understood. Yeah. Understood.
Like,
yeah.
It better stop costing us money. And then a few days ago, I turn it on and it's like this noise. It's like, oh, this doesn't sound good. Mm-hmm. And I still, for a few, and then I, oh, I rented a car.
Yes.
Because it's like, oh, my car isn't sounding good. And my company said, oh, you need to drive down to Nashville. And they say, you know, if you want, you can take a rental car. Mm-hmm. Like, well, my car is making this noise. I'll just rent a car and drive down to Nashville.
Right.
Good thing I rented a car. Because on the drive down to Nashville, I hit something in the center lane of the interstate. Ran over something. It's like, oh, that wasn't too good.
No, it was not too good at all.
2 miles.
Yeah.
Oh, did I tell you about this one?
Yes, you sent me the text showing the picture of the panel of your car showing that you had basically had two flat tires.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, this is a good thing I'm in a rental.
Yep. Oh, agreed.
Not my problem.
Yeah, agreed.
So I tell my wife, I think the turbo on my car is gonna, and she's like, you're spending too much money on that car. And then yesterday,
it's like, honey, do you want me to buy a new car instead? That's the two choices we have here. I can repair the current car and have so we don't have a car payment. Or we can get a brand new car.
Yeah.
That I'm driving and not you.
I know. Well,
I don't think.
Good news, bad news thing.
Right.
The good news is yesterday on the way back from work, I said, well, let me try something. Oh, look at that. It's not the turbo. I turned off the air conditioner and the noise went away.
Oh. Oh, that means it's probably the compressor.
The air conditioner. Yeah. Probably.
Yeah, the air conditioner.
Or it might just be low on charge. That's what I'm hoping.
That's true, but at the same time, it shouldn't be making noises. It's making noise that means...
Well, it could be that it's low on charge, which is okay.
I agree, but that means you're not really doing it when you had it on with it making the noise. Then that's not a good thing when it's making those noises.
Well, you know. I'm from what the stat now I'm thinking about it, it could very well be the charge as well, and it would be 120,000 miles on the original factory charge, so it's about time.
Yeah,
probably just ran low on charge, So it's like, okay, that's not going to be too terribly expensive.
Yeah, that's actually something I probably need to get that
checked out before I make the 8-hour trip.
Oh, agreed, agreed. You want that air conditioner working. Though.
Yeah.
And it's been hot, not too bad. In my mind, as long as you have the windows open, you could get away with not having the air conditioning on. But that's me too.
Well, yeah, but when it's in the mid-90s, it's like...
Oh, agreed, agreed. Well, it's not been in the 90s all that much around here. It's the hottest it's been getting is in the mid-80s, mid to upper 80s.
Well, I've been going down to Nashville a lot. It's a little hotter down there.
Totally different ball of wax, agreed.
Yeah.
But anyhow...
In fact, I'm going back down to Nashville this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well,
Saturday, drive back. What's that?
Well, given that we're discussing your work and just things, I'm totally unrelated to Starfleet Battles and the SFU on call. Why don't we just let's end it here, because I think we're done discussing the Carnivons and the other topic I have for this evening. It's getting too late to discuss that
at this point.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. I'll push it off for next week. I took some notes on it, which is on different with a variety of tournaments, including some of the ones that I wanted to discuss. Actually, were the Omega tournament, an EW tournament, a Frigate Squadron tournament, double elimination tournament, and something which is not SAB related, which is a FedCom tournament, and actually, I really liked because of it was improved and tweaked along the way. And I think it really, I know I've talked about it before. It's been a while though. But I still want to talk about those different kind of tournaments, but we can push that off until next week.
Okay, but I would like to point out one thing about FedCom tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did FedCom tournaments, I know they said, you know, let's make it 3-ship fleets. And it's like,
No, Barry, this is not that. This is not that.
Good.
It's kind of related to it in that you have a amount of BPV that you get to spend. Minimum of 2 ships.
Yeah.
Maximum to how many ships you want. But each empire has what's called a modification number. That is, it's a multiplier that you use for the cost of each ship. For example, Feds, Hydrans, and Zinni have a multiplication factor of 1.05. i.e., whatever the BPV is actually worth 5% more.
Mm-hmm.
And that is used for both the victory conditions, the victory points that you get from the scenario, because this is not, you know, whoever survives wins. This is victory points related. If you have more victory points than your enemy, you win, even if you lost a ship. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and in the case of like Ron and Satorians and the win, they have a multiplication factor of 0.992. So they have basically an 8% discount on their BPV, so not worth nearly as much. So you can buy more ship. So so instead of actually modifying the BPV directly, they've added multiplication factors to modify it, given that the scenario that you're playing. You know, the hexes are it's a little different sized board, but it's interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go through all of the differences here because I really want to save that for a discussion of the different tournaments, but I find it a lot better than Ken Burnside's original FedCom tournament idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, with that, Barry, you have a good night.
You too. Good night. Bye.
So, had a nice discussion about the Carnivans, which was, of course, big surprise topic, which wasn't on the schedule. But as I've pointed out multiple times, every single time I post, at least on the discussion board, which is the topics are subject to change without notice, and this is one of those times. To be honest, I didn't expect us to discuss Carnivans that long, but it did. But, you know, the Carnivans actually, as Gary pointed out, it's quite an interesting empire. I agree that it would have been, I think it's an interesting timeline to say that that the Carnivans actually survived. And I would actually like to see that as that they survived. Not, you know, the come back from the brink kind of idea. I like the idea. Just, you know, maybe not as a major empire, but they find them and they've kind of learned their lesson about being, you know, these kind of packs which don't support one another. That might just have one big, consider themselves one large pack, because one of the packs that wasn't completely destroyed. It was the possibility that they survived. So it'd be interesting to actually see something like that happen. You'll have something along the lines of the Hydrants, how they went off. You know, they were basically forced out of their home worlds and went into what's called the Old Kingdom. So in the case, or like the Paravians, where the Paravians escaped the Alpha Octant and went into the Omega Octant. And, you know, that kind of thing where, it's like the Andromedans, to be honest, it's to a certain degree, because, the Andromeda invasion's over, but the Andromedans still exist in the Alpha Octant. Now, what they're doing after the failed invasion, you got me. My guess is just attacking to survive, you know, because they need fuel, they need resources, you know, they'll do whatever they need to do to keep going, you know, for as long as it has to, until maybe a second invasion, for all we know. Okay, I'll end it with that. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.